through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Stacy, I was just reading this article. Actually, I just read a headline. I was reading a different article, but it said that men telling each other that they love each other is a muscle that they should flex more often.
And you just did it.
Yeah, I just told Howdy I loved him because he's about to leave.
He's beautiful.
And I think that's very true.
Yeah.
Not just on Valentine's Day. Men should tell each other that how much they appreciate each other and love each other more often.
I mean, Brent and Curtis are in there right now.
Doing not that.
No, I'm saying, like, here's your chance.
Curtis, I love you.
Tom, I love you.
And I love everybody in the back, too.
Yeah.
You everybody that, in the back row.
You hear that, guys? Tom loves you.
Yeah, I do. I love Brent, even though he doesn't care.
No, Brent's pretending to ignore you.
Do you and your friends tell each other that you love each other?
Yeah.
Good. Does it make you feel better?
Yeah.
All right. Seahawks free agents. Let's go.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run in 2020.
Let's go!
Contract extension profile.
This is a guy we kind of forgot about, Stacy.
Yes.
A guy who actually contributed when used, even though it wasn't really that often, but I can remember in my mind's eye catches that he made in that game against San Francisco in San Francisco. That would be
Josh Gordon.
Okay. On my sheet here.
Right here.
Somebody, Kyle wrote cornerback Josh Gordon. He meant Josh Norman. And as I'm looking at that.
Way to call Kyle out, then you were confused.
I'm like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Wait, wide
Josh
receiver.
Josh Gordon's not a wide receiver. He's not a cornerback. He's a wide receiver.
Josh Gordon, 28 years old. He'll be 29 by the start of the 2020 season. He appeared in 5 games for Seattle, was with Seattle for 6 weeks. Over that time, he had 7 catches for 139 yards. Now, those aren't stellar numbers. They're not numbers you're going to look at. His resume isn't something for 2019 that you're going to look at on its face and be floored by. But the key was his production on third down and as a potential deep receiving threat. His first appearance for Seattle was in a game against the 49ers, an eventual NFC championship team. On the road, he had 2 targets. They were vital. One was fourth quarter, third down conversion. The other was an overtime, another third down conversion. He was targeted 4 more times on third downs across his next 3 games. And in a heartbreaking kind of turn of events for him, his last and perhaps best catch for Seattle came shortly before he was suspended. This right here was against Carolina.
With a slot on the left, here comes the blitz. Russ steps up as the Hawks pick it up. Throw deep. Got a man out there chasing it. What a catch. Holy catfish. What a catch. Down to the 25-yard line. Josh Gordon diving on the end of his fingertips. Baby, what a catch. And welcome, Mr. Gordon. A huge gain in the Seahawks in Carolina territory, a 59-yard reception.
There's a reason that teams have taken a flyer, have taken a chance on Josh Gordon over and over and over again, despite his multiple suspensions by the league. It's because his talent seems exponential, unlimited. His ceiling is so high that teams have constantly tried to take him on, see if he can succeed with them. So far, unfortunately for him, unfortunately for those teams, it hasn't been able to stick. Now, it was a rather cheap deal that he had with Seattle. He was claimed off waivers in November, carried a salary of $833,000. Here's the thing. He forfeited over $238,000 of that as a result of his suspension, which is exactly the obvious problem standing in the way of him returning to Seattle in 2020. He's still serving that indefinite suspension, has not been lifted. No official updates yet on when Roger Goodell or the league will be looking at that or speaking about it. That was for violating the league's policies on performance-enhancing substances and substances of abuse. So while he's serving that suspension, Gordon cannot be a part of Seattle's program. There's no contract negotiations happening between Gordon and the team. There's no talking happening between Gordon and the team. He's reporting directly to the league for the time being. It's not impossible that Gordon could have played his last season in the NFL. So an intriguing free agent in that he would, in another world where he wasn't suspended, be incredibly affordable given his history of suspensions, lack of production, just lack of time on the field. An incredibly affordable, high-ceiling player. But you don't know, A, whether he'll avoid suspension again, B, whether he'll return to football again and have the suspension lifted, or C, whether football's even the right path for him moving forward.
It may not be, and he may be thinking about that right now. Here's the thing, though, strictly from a Seahawks standpoint, I know it makes that it's unlikely that they'll bring him back, but remember, oh, the reason that they got him or that they were able to get him in the first place is because he was waived and he fell 27 slots down, right? So that they were able to get him. What does that tell you about league interest in him just in general?
It's still there.
No, it tells you that there isn't that much because
there's not
27 teams passed on him before the Seahawks got to him.
Yeah, but he's still 28 years old.
I understand, but who's going to want to go out there and pay for him?
I think it's going to be someone that tries to take, if it's not Seattle and he is interested in coming back to the league. Again, you're right in that teams around the league or the league itself may have reached the last straw with Josh Gordon.
And now they're either going to say you're done. And he's
exactly.
Older.
They're either going to say you're done, we're done taking chances on you, or there are just going to be no more teams that are interested. But if there is a team interested, I could see them taking the approach Seattle did, which was, we're not going to incorporate you heavily into our offense. When they first brought in Gordon in November, we were all asking all week, like, how much have you been using him? What's he going to look like in this offense? Everyone was wondering, and he ended up against San Francisco having two catches. Again, they were of huge importance
timely
in that
catches,
game, but
for sure.
They were timely, but he purposely, it's not a coincidence, I think, that you had a player like him and he had just seven catches. I think they were very careful to not make him a number one target because you don't want to depend on a guy that hasn't proven he's dependable.
Well, didn't they say that they knew the suspension was coming when they first signed him?
I thought Carroll, during his press conference he had later the day that Josh Gordon was suspended on the 16th, he said that he did not know.
He said he didn't know? I thought he said that
it could be that they learned, they knew something was coming, but they didn't know that it was going to be handed down when it was. I don't know.
I don't think
it sounded to me like the team was surprised.
Would you want him back?
Yeah, but I think out of a kind of empathetic point of view, and because in a really selfish way, here's the thing. I don't know if coming back's the best thing for Josh Gordon. I don't know what would be, and who knows, maybe football is how he keeps his mind off things, but I think if you're dealing with addiction, sometimes the best thing to do is to remove yourself from an environment in which that addiction has fostered.
Do we know what he's even addicted to?
No.
Like, I think we've heard weed in the past.
In the past, but we never got confirmation as to what it was for his suspension from Seattle. It was two violations of both performance-enhancing drugs and PEDs, but you could have something like a masking agent.
Yeah,
could be a PED. So you really don't know.
Well, if
it was.
It's just weed, and he's flunking tests because he just can't stop smoking weed. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's the end of the world.
Well,
if it's harder drugs, that's different. That means he needs to be in treatment like immediately.
I think the problem teams have is, you know, even if this is legal in several states that have NFL teams, or if people in areas don't think it's a big deal, it's currently a league policy. And if you keep violating the same policy, what does that show about your commitment to this team or to the
obviously
league?
He's not committed.
And he's a guy, though, and it's what makes it interesting. He was beloved by his teammates when he was here, very quickly had a lot of support, not just from guys like Russell Wilson, but for fellow receivers like David Moore. Pete Carroll spoke highly about him. You want to see him succeed. He's a guy where, for some reason, he's messed up so many times, but you want to see him do well. I just can't see him coming back. I don't even know if I can see him coming back into the league. Which is just crazy to have had all the talent in the world, and it ended up panning out the way he did.
Yeah, realistically, I can't either. I mean, whatever spot he would occupy on the Seahawks team, I think they're probably going to end up, I mean, they've got a couple of guys already. Hopefully that they improve guys like David Moore. But maybe they draft somebody, fifth rounder or something like that.
I wouldn't be surprised to see them add another receiver. Last year they added, I think, three receivers for the first time since like 1980-something. It was the most receivers they'd taken in a draft class in a while. I still would not be shocked at all to see them add one because they need a number three receiver. They need someone behind DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. They don't have that right
now. He does fit our criteria of weapons around Russell Wilson and would you put team speed at this point? Yeah, he's still got some speed.
Yeah. Josh Gordon? Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
So he fulfills of the criteria we've set for the Seahawks to get back to the Super Bowl, he doesn't fulfill pass rush. He doesn't fulfill offensive line.
Weapons for Russell Wilson.
Weapons around
the
Russell
Wilson. The analysis for Josh Gordon is less than a year later, the exact same analysis we had when he was first claimed off of waivers, which is he is a low-cost, high-reward player.
And that's the thing. Aren't you looking for that guy anyway?
You are, but might the team or might fans feel differently now that he's been suspended once again? Might
you know
he
what?
Feel
I don't.
Differently?
I don't feel... Well, that's up to him. I don't feel differently about him at all. And I did then.
Yeah.
Because the suspension, you know, came. And I remember, I wrote that letter. I put it on 710sports.com saying, please, I beg of you, Josh Gordon, please straighten yourself out so that, you know, this thing can work here in Seattle. And he ended up getting suspended. I mean, I was mad then, but I still want him back. Or I want that talent back.
Would you be okay with them signing him to a deal and he's suspended again? You'd have to be okay
like,
with
like if
that.
I know that he's going to be out two or three games?
Yeah.
How much am I paying him?
Not a lot.
Not a lot?
Like a minimum.
Okay.
I mean, again, it would be a low-cost contract. I also wonder
yeah, sure,
if other teams will, at least with Seattle, who he spent time with, if they'll think maybe it isn't the best for him if we bring him back. They could make a decision like that.
And maybe it's not the best look for the team to be doing that now. But if you're just asking me hypothetically, do I want that talent on the team even with a couple of games suspension
yeah.
at no cost? I do.
I
absolutely do. All right, you want to go around and do some NFL headlines here?
Yeah, I do.
We're still on Olsen Watch 2020.
Nothing yet.
No, evidently he's negotiating with three teams. One of them is Washington. One of them is Seattle. Who was the third team? It was the Redskins.
Buffalo.
Oh, Buffalo, right. Buffalo may be the best spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, Seattle could certainly use the help. I know people aren't super pumped when I see some of the responses to bring him in, mostly because he's an older player, but Seattle doesn't have a lot of depth right now at tight end. You have to think. You have Luke Wilson hitting free agency as an unrestricted free agent, Jacob Hollister a restricted free agent, Will Disley coming off of a torn Achilles a season after suffering a ruptured patellar tendon. You've got Ed Dixon who may or may not be cut. You could potentially have one tight end under contract, Will Disley.
You know what? And I'll say this, a tight end is different from a wide receiver. With a tight end, you're not really worried about him losing a step, right? I mean, I assume he can still catch the ball.
Yeah, I mean,
he still knows how to run routes.
It depends how you use them. With Seattle, they like to use their tight ends. When you do a lot of run blocking, it helps to have guys in there. And so we all know they're going to make an effort to try to acquire someone. I don't think it's so awful that they're looking at an older tight end. I just think, like, if you want to concentrate your money, you have to pick somewhere to concentrate your money.
Right.
If you want to go get a star edge rusher or spend a lot of money on your defensive line, you're not going to be able to spend $8, $9, $10 million a year on some elite tight end.
Do you know who Greg Olsen used to block for? What running back?
Who's that?
Fozzie Whitaker.
Really?
All right.
Your boy, Fozzie Whitaker.
The Bear?
Fozzie
the Bear.
I still forget what he looks like.
Fozzie the Bear.
He's
or
the
Fozzie
one that says Waka Waka.
Waka Waka Waka.
No, this one's name is actually Fozzie Whitaker.
Yes, that's what I told you the other day. That's how we got started on this whole thing. It's Valentine's Day. Can you just give me something?
Sorry. Great job. I love that joke.
All right, good. Myles Garrett speaking on the Mina Kimes podcast. Now, for those of you who don't remember who Myles Garrett is, he's the one who ripped off Mason Rudolph's helmet and swung it at him, connected with it, and ended up getting suspended the rest of the year. Here's him talking about it.
I mean, he called me the N-word. He called me a stupid N-word. I don't like, man, I don't say the N-word, whether it's, you know, with A, E-R, to me personally, just shouldn't be said, and whether it's known by family, friends, anyone. And I don't want to use it because I don't want to, you know, find that appropriate around me for anyone to use.
Okay, let's just ask this question.
Okay.
If Mason Rudolph did say that, does that justify an assault with a helmet?
I mean, Myles Garrett still said it didn't justify his actions, but I think it adds some context.
Yeah.
On the one hand, I believe Myles Garrett because that was the reaction he had on the field and the anger he had on the field. I immediately thought, like, did someone say something? I mean, this is I've never seen this before. But then you also wonder, well, the league didn't find anything. Did they? It's just weird. Like, I have to think the league found something, but then I also believe him. And I know that sounds like a cop out, but I don't think he's lying.
I don't think he's lying either. And I'm sure somebody said something.
It's
I mean, that's just hard to believe. Right. I don't believe that a football player just up and rips a guy's helmet off and uses it as a weapon for no reason. And if Mason Rudolph really did say this, then he needs to be dealt with too.
Well, and they declined to reduce his fine. He was still fined. So,
Rudolph,
I mean, they
was.
Still found Rudolph accountable in that. It's just, wouldn't the quarterback almost always maybe not be mic'd up, but you'd be able to hear that audio, right? Come on. You couldn't find any audio?
So you think the NFL's hiding that away?
No, I don't know.
Maybe.
I think that they didn't do due diligence, or they weren't able to catch it and find it definitively. But
you know what? I don't think you have to be mic'd up to get
Miles Garrett
that audio,
is lying.
Though. Don't they? Doesn't NFL films have guys on the sidelines with those big,
like those flying saucer things?
Right. They're like almost like half spheres or something that pick up all the sound on the field, like just the pitter patter of feet on the ground. Like, if you've got enough of those things, wouldn't that pick up just faint audio of guys talking to one another? I would think it would.
Maybe. But
especially something where yelled.
In that situation, I mean, there was like three or four guys kind of tangled up.
Right.
It would be, I think it would be tough to kind of make out what three or four people kind of jostling.
And that could have been the case where they were like, we can't find anything definitively. But I don't think.
I don't know, man.
I have a hard time thinking Miles Garrett is lying. Like, what's the incentive to lie?
Well, to make Rudolph look bad, to make it look like he was justified in doing it.
But then eventually there's always a possibility people could prove that you're wrong.
Well, but
and he doesn't know. He doesn't know what audio the NFL has.
Yeah, but even if there isn't audio, how does that hurt Garrett? I mean, he can say anything he wants and get away with it scot-free.
I don't know. I just
he could say he used the N-word to me in the locker room on the way to the field.
That reaction that he had on that field was so much more than just a scuffle between another player that made you mad. Like, we've all seen fights on the field between players. That was, you are personally angered at someone. Again, like in his interview with Mina Kimes, he said my behavior, he didn't excuse himself for it. He said it was not appropriate at all. But I mean, the fact that he's maintaining this is telling.
So we still don't know if he's going to be able to come back the beginning of the year?
No, he was reinstated.
He was reinstated a couple days ago.
Yeah.
So the whole thing's behind him. I mean,
as far as the league goes, as far as league punishment and whatever, but
until he rips somebody else's helmet off, you imagine?
No, he won't do that.
Hey, by the way, we have a big payoff today.
What's it for?
Your chance to win two tickets to see Incubus with 311 and Bad Flower on July 15th at the White River Amphitheater. Tickets available now at Ticketmaster.com. So at some point between now and the end of the show, we'll be giving those away. You big Incubus fan?
I'm not going to lie. I was.
Okay.
In high school.
You don't have to apologize for that.
No. I loved Incubus. I remember I gave an Incubus CD to a friend and I was like, check this out, man. I burned it. I burned you a copy.
You're like, yo, this is fresh.
That's things that I feel like kids these days wouldn't understand. Like, if you said I burned a copy on a CD, do you think an 18-year-old would know what you were talking about?
I think maybe they've heard of a disc. They've heard of it.
I don't know.
Whether they've done it, whether they've burned one or not. We actually bought one time at a circuit. You remember Circuit City?
Yeah.
It's an old department store. They used to sell like electronics.
Well, it's like a radio
shop, the original,
right?
Best Buy.
Kind of, yeah. We could even get like a membership there.
But
they sold CD burners, like with two CD drives on it.
Oh, that is advanced.
Yeah, so you stick your original disc in there and the blank disc on the other side, and you can just start burning.
It's weird that
if
they would sell
that. If you had
one
of those,
that.
Man, you... Well, because...
Piracy laws weren't as crazy.
It's a good question. You know what? This is pre-Napster. And all that stuff.
Oh,
so, like,
I bet they cracked down after that.
They probably did.
It's so weird that a store would be like, here's how to copy music without buying another CD to give to your friends.
For personal home use only, I guess.
Yeah, like all the songs I got were just burned CDs.
Well, I mean, you could always upload...
You gonna catch me now?
You could always upload a disc onto your computer after that, though, and just burn it that way.
Yeah.
That was... well, I mean, today being Valentine's Day, that was a Valentine's gift, you know.
The go-to.
Yeah,
and you would write it.
CD.
Yeah, you would write it all around the CD, the songs that were on it, or you would write like a note to someone.
A mixtape.
No one else did this?
Well, I did it with tapes.
You would really make a mixtape for someone and write on it?
Somebody made mixtapes for me. I didn't make them. The girls used to come to me with the mixtape.
Oh.
The modern day equivalent would be like a Spotify playlist.
Yeah.
I guess. Ooh.
Yeah.
A former coworker of mine said that his old boss back in like the 80s, before you could just Google up lyrics, would write down, is it Morrissey? The Smiths.
Yeah,
would write
Morrissey.
Down lyrics from the Smiths and pretend that they were poems or letters, and girls would be super impressed
I'm
with them.
I'm sure.
Because you didn't know at the time. You couldn't Google and be like, wait a minute, this is an actual song that exists.
Yeah, there's no way she could verify that.
No.
You know what? That's actually not a bad choice to copy from, though.
Bold.
Hey, can we talk about this story real quick? And Curtis, you can put down the music there. This Eastern Washington story that suggests, there's a report, a faculty report, that suggests that they might even eliminate their athletics budget and department altogether. Mm-hmm. How sad is that?
It's really sad. And it's sad because it's already something that's happened to a school in Washington, and you just hate to see those programs go.
Western Washington?
Yes. Yeah. And so I was reading the report. So their athletics department spent $18.3 million, and $13.5 of that came from the university. And the university is saying, well, our enrollment is going down, but we're still spending a ton of money on athletics. So this is just one of the kind of proposals that they have in this report about how to analyze the costs and whatever. But another thing they said that's becoming controversial is the report says, quote, no positive that the cost of the athletics program or that the athletics program has no positive impact on our student enrollment, retention, or recruitment.
That's ridiculous.
I have a
that's
hard time buying that.
That's ridiculous. And look,
and how do you know that? How do you know? Did you go talk to students and do a survey and said, did you come here because of the school? I mean, you have football players that are at your school because of your athletics program.
I'm sure that they've done the research and they've got their data. But here's the thing. Especially at a university, you still need reasons for people to feel good about that university. And athletics is just one avenue where you can do that. It doesn't have to be every single sport, like right down to basket weaving or whatever it is, bowling. Competitive basket weaving. But a football team makes people, whether it's the students or the town, makes people feel good. That's important. Like the music ed department in a high school is always the first to go, right? Because it's like, okay, it doesn't serve the bottom line.
The arts always suffer.
Right. And when we don't have arts, we don't have people to like make movies or write books or make music. That's bad for our society.
I know, and part of this is a bigger problem with college athletics in general. To remain competitive and a place that people want to go, schools are spending these exorbitant amounts, and it's like for smaller programs, it's hard to keep up with that, and that's a bummer too because you wonder if this is happening to however many other schools.
Maybe that could ask Colin Cowherd for a loan. He's an alumni of Eastern Washington.
There you go.
What's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
All right, tomorrow we got the Seattle Dragons versus the Tampa Bay Vipers, 2 o'clock on Fox. That'll be the XFL game. Many of us will be at the game. Also, the Cougs are at USC, 5 o'clock on 710 ESPN Seattle. Huskies taking on at UCLA, 7 o'clock on ESPN2. Up next, how will the Astros be treated going forward? Talk about that on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
If you're a cheater and you know it, and you're still wearing an Astro uniform this year, should you... maybe thinking about wearing some extra armor. on your arm.
I think that there's going to be some league justice going on, some player justice.
You know what?
It seems like players are getting, not even players, in general, the tenor around this team is becoming angrier and angrier. And I thought that it would kind of pass, or that I thought that when the report came out, Curtis, we were just talking about it, that when the report came out, you thought, well, maybe it'll dwindle, or we'll see how this goes. Or maybe by spring training, they'll have, you know, escaped the worst of it, and people will just look forward to the season. Nope. They're now like the villains of
baseball. I can see Altuve and Bregman just sitting there in one of their living rooms being like, man, they're coming after us. Like, we're not going to get away with it this time.
No, they're absolutely going to. Although, what I wonder is if a player is hit and hurt, if the conversation just on Twitter will become that it's not civil. And
right.
That you can't right a wrong with a wrong. I think that would be maybe a bit of a turning of the
There's
page.
No place for that in this game.
I think that could be a conversation that springs from that. But,
yeah, but I mean,
absolutely think people will try.
All that really does is change the subject.
Yeah.
Right. If somebody, like when, after A-Rod got busted with the biogenesis thing.
Ryan Dempster.
Right. Ryan Dempster up at Fenway Park threw at him. And of course, the crowd cheers. But then Dempster kind of looks like a petty jerk
well,
for doing it.
I think that's what might be happening, too, is there's going to be conversations that come out of it that say, is this the right thing to do, or do you just move on? But it's going to be hard for players. I mean, they aren't going to play a lot of the teams and players that have spoken out the most against them, but it's going to be hard for a lot of players to just move past it and say, I don't want to be the bigger person because the league isn't doing anything.
Well, there was one player, at least today, who will play a lot of games against the Astros, and that was A's starting pitcher Sean Manaea, who had this to say about the Astros.
They cheated. They've cheated the game. They've cheated us as players, and it's that they can't take responsibility for their actions and try to make things better. And so they're just sweeping things under the rug and, you know, just doing their own thing. And to me, that just doesn't sit right.
I'm noticing all of the cheating has always been a part of the game crowd has kind of receded into the woodwork. I haven't heard about them lately. It's since the details, like the gory details of this have come out, the people who defend sign stealing, like, you know, back in the 30s,
yeah,
all of a sudden they're looking at this like, whoa, this really was taken to another level.
Well,
I can't defend this anymore.
I know it was 2018, but if you're with Oakland too, you're thinking like, oh, we could have been higher in the NFC West. Like they finished, or NFC West.
AL West.
In the AL West, they finished second.
Yeah.
Had 97 wins that year. I have a hard time believing that cheating was isolated to 2017, even though that's kind of the way the conversation's going.
Well, I think it's like a 3-year stretch at this point, right? Do you think they ever stopped
it
doing
like.
It? How could you possibly walk
you
away
from it? You
hadn't
been caught yet.
Once you started doing it, right?
Well, and you were doing it in a year, even last year, when the Nationals changed their approach in the World Series and won. So at least as recently as last year, the Dodgers had reached out to say, this is happening.
Right.
And other teams seem to have that feeling too. I think it was that you got the evidence pointed. There was enough evidence to say you did this definitively in the year in which you won the World Series. But it sounds like the tone from other teams and players is that everyone kind of knew that they were doing it. And it's this kind of baseball fraternity where either no one said much of anything, or the league just didn't take it seriously, or people felt like, well, everyone steals signs, and didn't realize at the time that the way that they were doing it was had crossed more lines than any other team.
Well, Chris Archer, the pitcher who was pitching for Tampa Bay at the time, he's now with Pittsburgh, he was quoted today, I believe it was in The Athletic, where he had conversations with members of the Astros in the 2017 season, and those players would say to Chris Archer, oh yeah, you were tipping your pitches tonight. That's how come we were hitting you so well. Come to find out, no. Like, they were banging on a trash can during Chris Archer's start.
Why would they have told him that, though? I read that same quote. That,
to be jerks.
Just to mess with him? Yeah.
Yeah. I think
be pride
deceptive.
And I also think that you can have people that are good people, like maybe at their core. I don't think this team is full of bad people. But I think pride and ego and success can make you act in a way that is kind of pathetic. And I think that
so now we're cheating, we're winning, and now we're taunting.
Yeah, I don't think that good people are always innocent of ever doing bad things. I think it's completely believable that this team and this organization started to feel really prideful. I mean, again, I go back to Jeff Passan's article that he had today. I mean, no one knows more about that at least on the outside, than baseball writers and people with getting a lot of access. And the way that they handled the Brandon Taubman situation, accusing the reporter initially of lying, there were other things pointing to the fact that this team just did not want to take accountability for anything.
You know, and I'm not saying that I excuse it, but sometimes once you get on a roll, like Mark McGwire in the home run chase with him and Sammy Sosa, when that got baseball going, can you imagine the immense pressure that he probably felt carrying, you know, this whole entire success of baseball on his back, but he was the only one who knew for sure that he was doing PEDs? I mean, how hard must it have been for him to stop at that point?
Yeah, but I don't know that this is, I see where you're coming from.
I mean,
I think there probably was a kind of pressure of people are really, the city's so proud to have the team that it does right now, and they've been longing for this, and I don't want to let anyone down. I'm sure that was a feeling that players had. But I would think that a lot of that is also self-serving. It's, we're winning, and yeah, we're cheating, but not in a way that other people aren't. I mean, we know that the other teams have done this. I think there's just this assumption that other teams do a version of it, so you aren't doing anything bad. And I think that's the feeling that people, the majority of people I've spoken to, have got from this press conference, is that they really only seem sorry that they're caught. And I'm generalizing a reaction that not all players or people with that organization might share. But that's the vibe that I get from it, is they still might think that other teams are doing this, and we didn't do anything that was that much worse than what other teams have done. We just won with it, and we got to a World Series, and we were good.
Do you think the Astros, because Paul Gallant, he's brought this up a couple of times on the morning show, where Houston had suffered through Hurricane Harvey about a month or so before the playoffs, and the Astros were definitely sort of a rallying cry for that city at that time in 2017, and kind of like how Tom mentioned, Mark McGwire kind of felt all this pressure to like help bring baseball back, even though he was doing it by some pretty shady means. The Astros, I think, probably felt a lot of pressure to help that city rebuild.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like, well, hey, we got to go out there and win a World Series, because anything less is not going to be able to, you know, that's not what we're about, and we're going to help the city heal. But also, they probably were like, hey, we got to go at this now even harder because it's been working for us, so why stop now?
And yeah, I'd accept that more if in your press conferences earlier this week you said, we're sorry for doing this.
Right.
It impacted the game. It gave us a benefit and an added edge, because that would be a mentality that I would associate with someone who wholeheartedly felt, you know what, it feels like it is worse for the city and worse for this community if I come out and say what we're really doing. Someone who just says it didn't impact competition or avoids answering any questions, I'm not thinking you're totally selfless.
Jim Crane, the owner, completely bombed that press conference the other day. I don't think that there's any two ways about that. I think you know what the Astros need? They need a do-over on that press conference with somebody else.
Just
from the organization.
Players,
you know,
in there.
The
don't let
person,
Jim Crane talk.
You know who the perfect person to have actually handled that press conference would have been?
Who?
A.J. Hinch.
Yes! Oh my gosh, Tom, exactly, because when he was initially fired, I felt a bit bad for him because he handled, when the Brandon Taubman situation happened, he handled it perfectly.
That's why he was hired as their manager in the first place.
He's likable.
To handle situations like that, and instead he was the first one kicked out the door. We sum it up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over!
There come a wavy man!
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up!
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
Ah! All right, I got an idea here for the big payday, or for the big payday, the big payoff.
Okay. Is it a game?
No, not really. By the way, I asked for a game show yesterday, and I did not get one today.
Well, because Jake was sick, so I had to do the profiles. I'm blaming it on Jake, because apparently he's not listening, because he didn't text any of us, so he'll never know.
I would have rather played a game today than talked about Josh Gordon.
Vipers.
Do you think you could have beat Curtis?
Oh, yeah.
On Tampa Bay Vipers trivia?
Never.
Aaron Murray, starting quarterback.
See, the thing is,
for how long?
Curtis and I have a mutual respect of one another, like given our capacity for minutia and trivia.
Yeah.
But the day is coming where you and I are going to have to go head-to-head.
You're going to eventually go toe-to-toe.
Right.
And I wouldn't mind directing the duel. You know what I mean? I think I'm a fair judge. I think I could come up with equally difficult questions.
You'd favor Curtis. You like him more than me.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, you do.
No.
Talk to him.
I would come up with really... Well, the cookies are in there.
Mm.
I've been eating them all day. I go in and break off a piece of one every single break because in my mind, it's less than eating a full cookie. And now, after six breaks, I've had like three cookies.
So you need to go home and lay down.
Yeah.
For today's big payoff, it's your chance to win two tickets to see Incubus with 311 and Bad Flower on July 15th at the White River Amphitheater. Tickets are available now at Ticketmaster.com. So for 311, should we go like 3 plus
Caller
1 plus 1? No. 3 plus 1 plus 1 would be what?
Five? Caller 5.
Fifth caller. Fifth caller right now, 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776.
Hurry!
He's going to win some tickets.
I was adding a sense of urgency.
To go see Incubus with 311 and Bad Flower. This is one of those shows, by the way, that a lot of people might be going to see 311 and not Incubus, the headliner. They're not necessarily the opening band or the middle band, but a lot
Incubus
of people.
Incubus is?
No, 311. But a lot of people might go to see them as opposed to going to see Incubus. I'd feel bad for them.
I think that's also a good pairing. Afterwards. Those two bands make sense together.
Totally. Totally, totally, totally. If you were on the Astros, would you have the guts to blow the whistle?
Oh.
Like, could you be Mike Fiers? Not that he's really being blamed as a whistleblower right now, but, like, I keep thinking back to the PED thing where we compare PEDs to this scandal here. And we all know it's not exactly the same thing. But Jose Canseco putting out that book, I mean, that led to a congressional hearing with current and ex-ball players testifying in front of Congress. But the problem with it was, who made the accusations and who released the information? Jose Canseco, the nutcase, writing this book, made everybody scapegoat him.
Yeah.
Even though he was, let's say he was 80% right. Let's say he had 20% of it wrong, but 80% of it right. That's still a heck of a lot.
Well,
and he's got access to a lot of it. In this case, we don't really have a scapegoat.
Would you do it? I don't.
Like, you know that I would.
Okay, so let's say.
I've been talking it all day. Here's the thing.
Let's say our office is doing something crooked.
Okay, like maybe we are.
For ratings purposes or whatever. Would I blow the whistle? Oh, my God.
Tom, listen to this. I am straight up stealing a line from Harry Potter. All so right. I apologize in advance. But it's a fair quote, and it's that it is difficult to stand up to your enemies, but even harder to stand up to your friends. How do you like that?
One more time, difficult to stand up to your enemies, harder to stand up to your friends.
Yes.
Okay.
So that it's almost more difficult to stand up to your friends than it is to stand up to someone you don't like or that's mean to you. And I think that's true, which is why I like that quote, even though I didn't quote it perfectly.
Yeah, because you don't want to be left alone. You still want to have the comfort of your friends telling you did the right thing.
It's so, so hard. I don't care if it's like a day-to-day thing where you just need to tell your friend off about something. But imagine being in a clubhouse and in the kind of culture that sports often has, where it's like everything is in-house. Nothing leaves this clubhouse or this locker room. It's the team before everything. I recognize how difficult that would be. And I give that credit because it would not be easy. You'd be ostracized. There's a risk that evidence is never found.
Publicly, by the way. Let's not leave that out. Publicly.
Yes. There's a risk that evidence is never found and that you forever look like a liar and fans hate you and the team hates you. It's a huge risk to take on. I definitely recognize that difficulty. I don't even know if I would do it. In my heart, I feel like the right thing to do would be to do it, but I'm not a courageous person.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I wouldn't do is I wouldn't participate in anything that would be illegal or that I could end up going to jail for. And that's not what we're talking about with the Astros, obviously. This is just cheat. Well, I don't know. No, nobody's.
Well, you're still breaking a rule and you're.
I mean, Congress intervened on PEDs and that doesn't seem as serious to me now as this does.
Yeah, I would say this is a severe kind of thing. It obviously wasn't PEDs, but it was an institutional cheating scandal.
Yeah.
And there was an organizational problem with the Astros. It wasn't one player taking PEDs. It was the entire team. And even if you were someone who said, oh, I don't want to be a part of it, you also never said anything.
And that's true.
And there were times when you were in games where you were taking hits away from guys, where you were messing up ERAs and sending teams out of the playoffs.
Yeah, you did it. You did a disservice to your game and to your fellow ball players, etc. So yeah, I mean, the whole thing is bad. I wonder how we'll move past it.
I think that right now feels like the most serious it'll get, the most antagonistic relationship baseball and its fans will have with the Astros, because I think once the season hits, there's just going to be a million and five storylines that start coming out. It will be hard for people to hang on to this. I think the Astros are in for a rough season. Mm. I think they're going to be booed in a lot of parks. But
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
No, I think it'll lessen over time for sure.
Curtis, who was our winner for the Incubus tickets?
Joe out in Roslyn.
So Joe can have fun this coming summer at the White River Amphitheater, seeing Incubus 311 and Bad Flower. We're back on Monday. Hopefully Jake will be okay by then. I assume that he will be. We'll be at the XFL game, so if you see us there, wave, but don't come too close.
Yeah, don't talk to us, but
yeah,
acknowledge
talk.
Our presence.
No, you can talk to us all you want. It's fine.
We'll sign autographs.
We're friendly
people.
Tom, Jake, and Stacey, we'll see you Monday, 710 ESPN Seattle.